the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, that's right. Welcome to the program. Believe it or don't, it's time for another hour of the Bucket Strategy Investing program. I always throw in little things just to keep you sharp. We got more of the best in money information. That's coming up this hour. You got a chance to get involved in the program right this minute. I just checked. We got all the lines open right now. And by the way, we've got more strategies for you. We're going to be taking your calls at those open phone lines. You just got to fill them up. Our professor, Rick Plum, is back again with me. I'm Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group. So if you got a money question, we do have the answers for you right here. Your emails, your phone calls, all those are just ahead. And we do, as I said, have some lines open for you. Give us a call. You have a question on anything at all related to your money. It doesn't matter what it is. Saving, buckets. We were talking about that last hour. Strategy, retirement, Social Security, life insurance. In fact, I'm going to mention that to Professor Plum in just a moment. Any one of the many topics that we discuss on this program, call us now, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You can also get your emails to us here in the studio, wealthed.com at the Find Your Answer link. Find Your Answer at wealthed.com. And one of the reasons that we do what we do here on the show each day is our strong belief that everyone should have some kind of a retirement strategy. We prefer a bucket strategy. A good strategy. That's one that makes your retirement work for you, one that fits your unique needs and goals. So you want to give the people at Lucia Capital Group a call. We've seen them. We see them every day. It's the Brain Trust. They'll set you up with a bucket strategy of your own. You can talk to Professor Rick Plum or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. You can schedule an appointment with a Brain Trust member like Professor Plum and get yourself started on the right track to retirement. Again, that's 800-644-1150. We thank them for sponsoring this hour of the program. A lot of stuff to talk about this hour while we wait your calls at 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We had a call last hour, Professor Plum, and a fellow from Union City, New Jersey, Archimedes, and he had said that he owned a universal life insurance policy, which is a cash value type of a policy. Mm-hmm. And this seems to me to be one of these things that oftentimes, like some of these annuity products that we see, tend to get missold. Now, for people who missed that, if you could just reset what his particular situation was.
Well, he wanted to know how he was going to be able to take cash out of it when he ultimately retired. He was 50-some years old now. He's going to retire at 65 or so. So he's got 10, 15 years before he needs to take any money out of it again. Found out later that he's already taken some money out of it. And he just, how do we go about taking money out of it? Well, there's two ways to get money out of a cash value policy. You can withdraw your basis. Your basis is the amount of money you've contributed to the policy over the years that you've had it. Not every policy allows that. Some just automatically start loaning money to you. That's the second way to get the money out. You borrow it. You know, instead of taking a withdrawal or a distribution of your actual principal, they loan you and they collateralize the cash value so that they know they're going to get paid back.
With the insurance policy itself, right?
When you die, the death benefit pays off the loan. Obviously, you have to have the cash value in there to do it. So he had been paying $60 a month for this $25,000 policy for the past 10 years, but his cash value is still only $700. And he said that he'd already taken a loan against it. Now, that loan at an early age and an early time frame in the policy is going to be a fairly detrimental issue to the policy. It just stops growing at that point. And unfortunately, these types of policies, any cash value policy, needs the cash value to grow to help reduce the internal costs of the policy. And I want to get into how policies work, but that cash value is very important for the longevity of the policy. And so at this point, he's 10 years into it, he's paid $7,200 in premiums, and he's got $700 in cash value. I don't know how much the loan is right now, the death benefit's still $25,000. He said that he was earning 6%. Now, it may have actually been earning 6% on the cash value back when he bought it 10 years ago. It's not earning 6% on the cash value now. Now, it may be a very good policy in that it may be earning 3 or 4%, but there's not a lot of cash value in there. And there are a lot of expenses because of what he's done with the policy.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but people, you know, oftentimes set these up for the very purpose of doing what our caller wanted to do, which is to take money out and borrow it on a tax
tax favor.
I don't want to say tax free because it really.
It's tax favored. Well, if you do it right, and
it can be tax free.
And on time, it can be tax free. If you do it wrong, it can be a tax nightmare, because you run out of cash, you run out of everything, and you get a tax bill because you didn't die in time and the life insurance didn't pay off. The loan came due when the policy lapsed. That can be a problem. That is a major problem. So the issue at this point, though, with Archimedes is, what do you want this life insurance to do for you? The way it's set up now, it's probably never going to grow very well. So do you need $25,000 worth of life insurance? A lot of people like having at least some amount of money in a life insurance policy that is going to be there no matter when they die, and it's more from a death benefit standpoint than a cash value accumulation for a lifetime. And so, I mean, it's very nice to know that if you died within a couple of weeks, your family will have enough money to pay the credit card on on the burial that you
or whatever
went through,
it is,
you know, to help pay for the final expenses. And so there's a certain emotional aspect that makes it very desirable to have that life insurance. If that's the case, then let's make sure the life insurance stays in place. And maybe we can find a way to do it for less than $60 a month. On the other side, if it truly is a cash accumulator asset that you want to deal with, and you're trying to create as much cash value, you need to put more money into it. You need to put in as much money into it as the insurance company, or I should say the IRS, allows without adversely affecting the tax treatment. So you just want to pour money into it. A $25,000 policy is probably never going to be that efficient. Inside of a life insurance policy, there are variable fees based on the amount of risk the insurance company is taking, how much death benefit is actually being placed. And there's basically statutory fees, just flat out fees, $50, $75, X dollars, no matter what the death benefit is. And so very small policies tend not to be as efficient as larger policies now, because these fees, which are relatively small by nature, become a much larger percentage of a very small account.
So when you say small policies, you're talking about the death benefit,
or
you're talking about
the amount of
money that's put in?
The death benefit.
Well, because when you purchase one of these universal life policies, or any of these cash value policies, isn't generally the idea is to keep the death benefit as low as possible while you're funding it
if I'm buying it for accumulation, yes.
So in his case, well, so
the
in the
$25,000 is still too small.
Still too small of a death benefit.
It's too small of a death benefit to be a good accumulator. Because he's got like $700 in cash value in there. If the policy fee by itself is $75, which is not an uncommon policy fee, just a flat fee every year.
That's a percentage.
That's more than 10% of his cash. Even if he's earning six, he's not even starting to cover the mortality expense, which isn't great because it's only $25,000. But he doesn't even cover the policy fee.
So there are limits
and he's
to
not
how
earning
much
10.
When you talk about overfunding some of these life insurance policies. By the way, 877-PLANNER, we've got some lines open if you want to ask a question on anything. 877-752-6637. I just want to make sure that this is clear. When you're considering a cash value insurance policy, something like a $25,000 death benefit, you can't fund that with $500,000 of cash, can you?
No. I don't know what the actual number is. The number is going to change depending upon the age of
There's
the individual.
A limit.
There is a limit, and it is based on your age and the period of time that you're funding it and things like that. But with the $25,000 policy, they're fine for death benefit. If you want them for that emotional feel that you're going to have a death benefit for $25,000 when you die within a couple of weeks, a month or so, as soon as you can get the certified death, certificate, your family, well, you won't get it, you're dead, but your family gets that certified death certificate, they can get the money or whoever the beneficiary of it is.
But
it's fine for death benefit. Those size policies are not good cash accumulation policies.
Okay, so I guess my question would be, why not just get a much cheaper term policy, other than the fact that the term can run out at some point and will?
Well, it goes back to, why are we buying this? Are we buying it for the death benefit that I want no matter when I die? That's not a term policy, because most likely I will live longer than the term policy than I can afford the term policy. The term policy will skyrocket at some point if I live long enough.
Once
and
the
I
term
hope
is
I
over.
Do.
Yeah.
But the permanent policy, it's more expensive going in, but it pays off regardless of when I die. If I live to be 85, 95, 105, that policy will
It'll
pay
stay
off.
Stay in force as long
as
you keep
make
the
my
premiums. Yeah.
With a term policy, at some point, the guaranteed level portion of it, 5-year, 10-year, 15, 20-year period of time, is going to end. And if I haven't ended by the end of that time, the next year's premium is astronomically increased. I mean,
it really is. You take a $100,000 death benefit And you're paying, I don't even know what it is. Call it, you know, $300 a year, something like that, depending. That $300 a year can go up to, you know, a few thousand.
5,000 or something. And the reason is, let's say it was a 20-year term. And in the 21st year, you don't want to see that increase. So you start looking around. The only people that will keep that insurance policy are people that, A, need insurance or want insurance, and can't find it anywhere else cheaper because you're not healthy anymore. So the insurance company knows that the only people that are going to keep that policy are unhealthy people.
And people who are actually going to, are expecting to get some kind of a death benefit.
They are jacking the price up. If you can get, if you're still healthy, you're going to replace it with a new policy.
So I guess the upshot of this is, folks, that if you have any type of cash value life insurance policy, just make sure that you are a candidate to have one. And a lot of people aren't. Some people are, but a lot of people are not. If you have questions on this or anything else, you give us a call. We'll take some more phone calls and emails when we come back. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Bucket Strategy Investing continues when we come back right after this. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're taking your calls. 877-PLANNER, our number. P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We got some room on the phones, but just a little. And we're going to take your calls in just a moment and some emails, too. I want to remind you that every Tuesday right here on the... right here on WealthEd.com. If you happen to be watching WealthEd.com, it's the Social Security Show featuring me, Johnny Dean, and Professor Rick Plum, this guy right here. It's Tuesdays, every Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. As the name would imply, we talk about Social Security. It's a very, very fast half hour. I don't know how we even get all the information in that we do in that half hour. But you want to tune in, learn all about Social Security strategies, learn all about the laws, the changes. We talked to you about your questions because we got a lot of emails at we read on that program and answer questions. So if you have a question, you can send it to us via our website, wealthed.com, which is where you go to watch this program, or you can give us a call. There's a number right there at wealthed.com, and you can take part in the program. All right, that's the Social Security Show. It happens every week, as I said, Tuesdays, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern, only at wealthed.com. Okay, I want to get some of these calls. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Let's move along to, is it Eli or Ely? Eli, Las Vegas, Nevada. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. What's up?
I asked a question, where do you put your money? If the banks are going to go bankrupt in accordance to the rumors, the government is so far in debt, what is going to happen to the country and your savings?
Nothing. The country, first of all, will not go bankrupt. It can't. That's impossible. We've been hearing rumors. I went back as far as 1943, where they talked about debt and the unsustainability of it. There was one bank, I think, last year that went bust somewhere in Wisconsin, or maybe that was this year. Anyway, it's. What are you really concerned about, Eli?
The savings that you put in the bank, the money that you have in the bank, if they go bankrupt, where would you be?
That means the whole country is gone because they're backed up by the federal government, the FDIC. And without the federal government, there are no...
Wait. Let me correct you, please. FDIC is not the government. It's a corporation.
I know it's a corporation, but it's without it, it's backed up by the government. And so... For that to fail, we'd basically
I am sorry to argue with you. It is not backed up by the government. That's a fault that has been perpetrated on us Americans for a long time. It's about time that we tell the truth.
Okay, well, then
what
you should invest in is lead in the form of little shells. That's the only thing that's going to matter.
Well, no.
All the banks fail, we're having anarchy.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not going to happen. There's the federal government, even though it's the FDIC is a corporation, the federal government is not going to let people's savings go down the drain. It's not going to happen. If you're afraid that your bank is going to go bust, don't put your money in a bank. You know, you could put your money in a safe. You could put it anywhere and have cash. There are people who, for years and years and years,
have collected gold
for some reason.
If the banks go bankrupt and the government doesn't stand behind the Federal Depository Insurance Corporation, FDIC, then the government is worthless. The banks are worthless. Cash at that point is worthless. So it doesn't matter what you put your cash in, the cash is worthless. So if that's your situation that you think is going to happen, the only option you have is to move. And I don't mean move out of Las Vegas. I mean move out of the country to some place where you feel that they won't go out of business. Because that's the only thing that could happen if all the banks fail and there's nobody standing behind it.
Yeah. So anyway, Eli, that's our take. I hope you don't take those rumors seriously.
Gold is the only other option because
there's a very small percentage of people who don't understand how things work that, you know, have been. And I said, you know, people have been saying this. I went back to 1943 where people were saying it was going to happen any day.
And we were running fairly large deficits because of World War II at that time.
Well, yeah. But again, the deficits don't matter. That's just added money into the economy.
It was more important back then when we were actually on the gold standard.
Well, we're not on the gold standard. Yeah,
we're not
on the
anymore.
Gold standard. No, we weren't really even on the gold standard. We came off it when we had to for things like the war. But, you know, people can. I hear about the debt, $18 trillion or $19 trillion, whatever it is. All that means is that's the amount of money all of us hold at the banks, the federal banks. When you put $10,000 in your bank just went into debt $10,000.
Because they owe me the money.
That's it. So when you put money into a treasury bond, it's your money. The government doesn't use it. $19 trillion can easily be paid back in one day without any new money being created. It's just a problem of understanding how everything works. And this is what bothers me, Professor Plum.
Obviously.
Constantly. Well, it does. The same way you're bothered by people who, you know, missell based on, you know, false, misleading information, some of these products that we talk about, annuities and all that stuff.
But if you really believe all the banks are going to fail and that the government that says they're going to stand behind the banks doesn't stand behind the banks.
For whatever reason, we don't know why.
Then nobody will have any faith in the government. And if nobody has any faith in the government,
then all your money's worthless.
Nobody's going to have any faith that that dollar bill issued by the government is worth anything. Mm-hmm. So that becomes wallpaper, scrap paper. It doesn't matter. You can't go to the bank. You can't go to the federal government. The only thing that matters is what you can hunt, kill, and raise.
Well, so we go back to being a barter economy, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're just going to be saying, hey, you know, I'll trade you this
bushel of corn for
that buffalo or whatever it is. You know?
Buffalo, yeah.
If you've had buffalo meat, you know what I'm talking about. All right. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. I know we had a couple of questions on the life insurance thing we just talked about. I'll have to get that after the bottom of the hour. I did want to get to an email, though, from Gary in Glendale, Arizona, who says, are you suggesting, let's see, you can protect IRAs and 401ks from required minimum distributions and taxes by investing in laddered annuities to extend the required minimum distributions to age 85. What's your opinion? I think what he's talking about.
I'm not suggesting it. No. There are people that are proposing it, and but they're not just laddered fixed annuities. That is not what they're talking about. Not when they talk about deferring the required minimum distribution until age 85. What they're talking about are something known as qualified longevity annuity contracts. Now, there are longevity annuity contracts. We've had longevity annuity contracts for some time. The newer ones that are qualified longevity annuity contracts, what that means is they qualify for not being counted towards the required minimum distribution and how to calculate that required minimum distribution. There are limits. You can put in up to 25% of your tax-deferred account, capped off at $125,000, into one of these types of accounts and avoid the required minimum distribution on it at that time. So let's just say that it's you have $400,000 in your IRA, you're getting close to required minimum distribution age, and you take a quarter of that, 25% of it, $100,000, put it into a qualified longevity annuity contract. So now the next year you turn 70 and a half, you have a required minimum distribution. Instead of looking at the account value being $400,000, you exclude the portion in the qualified longevity annuity contract, and you only calculate the RMD based on $300,000. You reduced your required minimum distribution by a little under $4,000.
Yes, and so while that's all well and good, the actual policy that you're talking about is not necessarily
Oh, the annuity contract stinks.
Yeah, exactly. And we can get into that, too. All right, 877-PLANNER. A little bit of room on the phones. 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're answering your money questions. Whatever question it is, we're here for you. Brain Trust standing by when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions here till the top of the hour. So if you've got questions, call now. We got some lines open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. And we got questions answered in person as well. Don't forget, we have these. There's still some left. A few retirement income strategies workshops for the Spring Series 2016. It's presented, of course, by Lucia Capital Group. If you want to get in touch with the Brain Trust and see them in person and get your money questions answered and learn all about retirement income strategies, like the ones that we've been talking about on this program today, well, you can go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, at the live events tab. Meet Professor Plum, meet Terry Keyes. These guys actually travel. I guess if you knew where everybody lived, you could travel to their homes. We try to meet them at least 9/10 of the way by going to the local cities, you know? So, by the way, if you have looked at the list, and for whatever reason, your city is not on the list of places that the Brain Trust has headed so far this year, say, hey, we would like you to be here. We live in X whatever city, and we'd love you to be there. And if we can make the arrangements, we will be happy to do so. We want to meet all of our viewers and listeners. Once again, the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops, you sign up at wealthed.com, wealthed.com, in the live events tab. So we got a couple of emails here. We're going to get to them shortly. I know I had one that we'll get to in just a little bit on, actually two on life insurance. So actually, let's do this one from Shane, first of all. This is Shane in Las Vegas. We were talking about life insurance policies and universal life. This is a little bit along those lines, maybe not. I'm 43 years old and I want a life insurance policy that will pay off my home, any credit card debt, cover funeral costs, and still give my family a year's salary. What is the best type of policy to buy?
Well, it depends on, you want to pay off your home. Do you plan on having a mortgage for the rest of your life? Do you plan on having it, you know, always having a mortgage? There are people that say, look, I will always have a mortgage, especially if I can get it for 3%. You know, now he's 43. It's unlikely that he'll maintain the current mortgage for the rest of his life. I mean, 73, even if it's a 30-year mortgage. And who knows what interest rates will be after that. So do you plan on having a mortgage forever? Or is it this particular mortgage you want to pay off and it has maybe 20, 25 years left? That changes the type of insurance that you're going to be looking for. On the credit cards, do you expect to maintain some kind of credit card balance forever and ever? Or is this a short-term issue? I'm going to be out of credit card debt and try to be, you know, a little more judicious with my credit card use over the next, you know, once I get out of it, and maybe I'll only owe $5,000 at a time at the most if I had an emergency. That becomes a short-term need. Now, the funeral costs, that's for the rest of your life. So, and then the last one was to provide 1 year's worth of salary. Now, do you need and want to provide 1 year's worth of salary even after you're retired? I mean, if you're making $80,000 a year, and then you retire and you're living on your retirement income and you died, you still want to provide $80,000 a year to your heirs. That's probably a shorter term issue, only while you're working. So three of the four needs are term type needs. Buy term insurance for that. The other one, the funeral expenses, are a forever one. For the rest of your life, you're going to, at some point, you're going to have funeral expenses. So the reality is one type of policy is probably not what you want. You probably want two different policies. Maybe one policy that lasts for the rest of your life, a cash value, maybe a guaranteed universal life, or maybe an investment type cash value policy for some of the need, $50,000, $100,000. And then to cover the rest with term, because it's going to be much more efficient to do that. So a need that lasts forever, cover it with permanent insurance. A need that lasts for a specific term, but not forever, cover it with term insurance.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Okay, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. A couple of calls. We're going to get to those now. Let's see. We'll move John up next in Allentown, PA. Hi, John. How can we help you today?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Doing very well. How are you doing?
Very well. Listen, I have a question. My wife and I are planning an early retirement at age 62 in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to lay out the scenario that we have. I'm concerned about how various types of income will be treated.
Okay.
Primarily at that time in 2 years, we'll have home equity of $250,000. We'll have cash accounts of $200,000. We'll have a traditional IRA of $200,000 and Roth IRAs worth $200,000.
Okay.
The plan is that I would take my reduced benefit Social Security at that time, which would be $1,200 a month, as opposed to waiting to 66, because it'll be about $1,600 at that point.
Okay.
My wife, who's been the primary earner, her full-term benefit at 66 will be $2,500. So we'd like to hold off on that one as long as possible. But in the interim, I would continue working. I'm self-employed, and to regulate my income to stay below the $15,700 threshold.
Right.
But I wondered how other types of income that we would be receiving would be treated. We have pensions of $2,000, which we're collecting now and saving. We also have a separate annuity, which would pay $250 a month. And we're also considering the possibility of doing a reverse mortgage on the equity in our home, which I've used calculators to predict that number will be about $600 a month.
Okay, well, let's go through a couple of different things. The pensions, obviously, are going to be taxable. The Social Security may or may not be taxable based on some other issues. The annuity, that $250 a month that's going to be started from the annuity, when does that start, at age 65 or so?
No, we can do it now, but we're holding off until we decide to make this decision or unless we hear otherwise.
How much is the annuity worth today, and how much did you put into it?
It'll be worth about $25,000 when we're 62. We've put in 11.
Okay. And the way that you're going to take it out, are you going to what they call annuitize it, or is this some type of a systematic withdrawal from the annuity? It matters on the taxation.
Well, it's one of the annuity options. I believe it's a 10-year.
Okay, that sounds like an annuitization. And so if you were to do an annuitization, that $250 a month payment would be about 60% taxable and about 40% return of your principal. So that's a rough number. So only about 150, 160 of that 250 a month would be taxable. The other portion would not be taxable, just be a return of principal. If you take money, when you take money out of the IRAs, the traditional IRAs, they will be taxable. When you take money out of the Roth IRA, assuming that you've had the Roth IRA for at least 5 years, they will not
be. Yes, we have.
Then there will be no tax on those distributions because you're 62 or older when you start taking the distributions. The money that you earn every year on that $200,000 of personal assets, whether it's interest, dividends, whatever, that will be potentially taxable in the year that it's earned. If it's earning interest, it's going to be taxable as interest, ordinary income that year. If it's capital gain, long-term capital gain, you receive a preferential tax treatment on that realized long-term gain. If it creates a qualified dividend, it'll create a preferential tax treatment on that qualified dividend. All of those different sources of income, the pensions, your ongoing work, the interest, the dividends, the IRA distribution, if any, and those things, start adding up, and you take a look at those, and you look at the amount of Social Security you're earning to determine how much, if any, of the Social Security becomes taxable. The home equity line, or the home equity reverse mortgage, which I would not do at 62. I would wait until I was 72 or 82 to do a reverse mortgage. If you do take a reverse mortgage, that's not taxable. So does that cover all the angles there?
Yeah. The only thing I was wondering, what if any of these, I thought that for Social Security purposes, the qualifier was that it had to be earned income, not interest or pensions.
We're talking about two different things. The earned interest or the earned income is what you're talking about with the retirement earnings test. If you have a job, are you even eligible for receiving a Social Security benefit if you're under full retirement age? And to determine whether you are even eligible at all, it has to do with earned income. Now, the other side of it is, even after full retirement age, at any age, once you're eligible for receiving a benefit, once you're receiving a benefit, will that benefit that you receive be taxable? That number depends on all the other income that you have in the household. So there's two different tests going on here. One is eligibility, if you're under full retirement age, to even receive a benefit. The other is, okay, you're eligible to receive the benefit.
Now,
you've been paid a benefit. Is it going to be taxable or not? When it comes to the taxation side of it, they look at everything. They do not look at home equity distributions. They do not look at Roth, qualified Roth distributions. But they look at long-term capital gains, even if it's taxed at a zero bracket. Qualified dividends, even if it's taxed at a zero bracket. Tax-free municipal bonds, tax-free. They look at all those incomes to determine whether your Social Security is taxable.
John, I got to take a break and get to a few more calls. If you have some more questions, you can hang on. We can talk to you off the air perhaps a little bit more about this. So if you have more questions, I'm sure Professor Plum can talk to you more about it. Linda in Manchester, don't go away. You're going to be next. Just a couple more minutes here, please. Thank you very much. We'll give you the full allotment of time to ask your question and get it answered, because that's what we do on this program. We still have just one line open, 877-PLANNER, and not a lot of time to get to it. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, coming right back with more questions to your answers to your questions when we come back. Where's this hour gone? Wow, we're almost finished with the hour. All right. We've got very little time. We've got a lot of stuff to get through here. We won't get to all of it, but we'll take as many calls as we can. Coming up tomorrow on this program, if you're watching live, we're going to be talking about saving for college. One of the many topics that we'll have. How do you save for college? What different programs are there available to you? Are there ways you could possibly get some credits? Yes. That's the preview answer right there. Yes, we'll tell you how. Coming up on the program tomorrow, right here, Bucket Strategy Investing. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. We got some folks been hanging on, and we appreciate your patience. Let's go next hastily to Linda in Manchester, New Hampshire. Hi, Linda.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I have a question. I was wanting to get help. My husband and I, we are redoing our will, and we did it initially 12 years ago when we had our second son. He's 12, and my stepdaughter is 34. The issue is she is terrible with her money. 12 years ago, we had pace to go out if we died at like 30, 35, and 40, hoping she'd be a little more mature. And
she hasn't made it yet.
That is not the case. She's one of those lottery runners who would blow it all, you know?
Yeah.
So it's sad, but we're trying to see what options we have. And does she have to know the total amount if you put into a trust? And maybe we just paid her the interest off the principal. I'm just looking if you have any ideas in that scenario for her not to waste it all.
Well, the big issue is you're not going to be paying it to her because you won't be here. So you have to have somebody in place, the trustee. And
we have that already, yep.
So you have the trust. I actually don't know the rules in New Hampshire, whether or not they have to know that they're a beneficiary, but I don't know if they have to know how much is there. You don't have to pay out principal. You can just say she gets interest only, whatever the earnings are, and you can define the earnings as interest only or capital gains and other things. And you can say, that's all she gets. She has no rights to anything else until she's 105 or until she passes a series of exams that means that she can actually handle money, which we don't have those exams right now. So you don't have to put in that she gets any principal at any time in the future. But, you know, it's just a matter of she gets income, and that's it. And then once she passes away, whatever the rest of it goes to your 12-year-old son, who's by that time 65 years old, 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're.
Are there any other? This is about $4 million, so I just don't want
to. Yeah, your concern. It sounds to me, Linda, that your concern is that even if you can control it, you just don't want her to know, or maybe anybody to know, exactly how much is in there. Is that correct?
Well, I just think that she would act differently if she didn't know.
Yes.
You know, if she knew she was getting the payout forever, and there was $2 million in there for her, I think she would be more frivolous than if she had no idea.
But she doesn't have to. I mean, I don't think she has to know there's $2 million. The only thing she has to know, and the trustee would tell her, look, you are going to receive an income from your inheritance, and the income this year is $50,000. That's it.
Okay.
You have absolutely no right to anything other than income. You can never ask me for principal. That's not part of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a question of having it written the proper way.
Right, and that's also having a trustee that she can't wrap around her little finger.
Oh, no, we've We've got the perfect person, luckily.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, it sounds like you're actually doing everything the proper way.
But you'd have to check with New Hampshire whether or not the person, I mean, she's not entitled to the principal. So does she even have to know? I don't think she should even have to know about what the principal of the estate was when she has no rights to the principal.
So it's really a matter of state-by-state law that dictates that.
I think so. I mean, there might be some minor, but I don't think she needs to know.
That's ideal. Okay. Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
All right, Linda. Yep. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
And I mean, if my parents are worth $10 million and they give me, you know, I'm in the will for the trust for a $50,000 distribution, does the trustee have the, when I'm only going to get $50,000, do they have to tell me, oh, by the way, your parents were worth $10 million and you got $50,000? They didn't like you the most.
Well, I mean, the question is, see, a trust is not necessarily
a public
document. So I can't imagine that you would, in any state, have to do this. In fact, this is one of the reasons you set up a trust.
Unless it's a percentage of the estate, which then the percentage of a number, I need to know what the number is to know what the percentage is. If I'm only getting an income and I have no rights to principal, and this is not a legal opinion in any way, shape, or form, because I'm not allowed to give those because I'm not an attorney. But why would anybody have to know what the value of the estate was if I'm not entitled to any of it anyway? I'm only entitled to income.
Now, what kind of a trust are we talking about? Now, she's setting this up. She and her husband are setting this up for her stepdaughter, mm-hmm. who's 34. What kind of a trust are we talking about setting it up here?
Just your... It's an inter vivos living trust.
Okay, so it's one that says upon mine or both
upon
of our...
On the second of us to die... This new person is the trustee, and they will handle the assets as follows. Boom, 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 boom. They set forth how many booms they want.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to split it 50-50. Half of it goes to our son. He's too young right now to receive it. So he can have income as necessary in the trustee's discretion for extracurricular activities, yada, yada, put it forth. He's eligible for 25% of his share when he's 25. He gets another... you know, percentage when he's 35, and he gets the full amount when he's 50 or whatever the number is. They can write this however they want.
Now,
on the other side, they can put it in however they want for her.
Right. Now, when they write this trust, the trustee is obliged to follow the rules. Mm-hmm. But does this mean that they're legally obliged? I mean, if they said that this person gets no more than 30 grand or 40 grand a year, that's it. What difference would it make if the daughter and stepdaughter in this case said, you know, gee, I really like more. Can you give me, you know, 100,000? I mean, is the trustee legally obligated to follow what's in the trust, or do they work at their discretion?
Well, it depends on how the trust is written. The trust can be given, the trustee can be given the discretion to pay it out or not pay it out.
Or not be given the discretion.
Or not be given the discretion. And then it comes down to, but the only thing that's happening there is somebody would have to claim that the trustee is not working in accordance to what the written word is. Of course, they'd have to know what the written word of the trust was. And so like the younger child in this case, if the trustee starts giving out too much money to the older one, he can say, hey, wait a minute, no, that principal is for me, because the trust is written that whatever is left in the trust when my older stepsister dies goes into my share. And if he finds out that the trustee has given the older sister all the money, he could actually sue the trustee, and the trustee would be liable for that shortfall.
Yeah, and the trustee is not going to win in that particular example, I wouldn't think.
But it's not the easiest lawsuit either, because the kid has to know about it.
No. And it does cost to set something up like this. I mean, the more complicated the trust, the more arms you put into this thing, more controls, the more expensive it's probably going to be.
And this is where a corporate trustee works well, because they don't care what you think.
They don't care. They don't know. You're just another number to them or whatever. And that's oftentimes what you want. Okay, we didn't get to all the emails as usual. We'll get some more of those tomorrow. If you have a question for the Brain Trust Off the Air, any of the Lucia Capital Group Brain Trust advisors, including Professor Plum, you can talk to them at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. That's all the time for this hour. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities
Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.